This is a podcast from the U.S. Department of the Interior.
We join the Hall of Fame in congratulating this year's inductees and thank all of you for your own contributions to our sport. It is also my pleasure to introduce a special guest who would like to say a few words to you this evening. Mr. Dirk Kempthorne has had a long career of public service, first as mayor of Boise, Idaho, then U.S. Senator, and then governor of Idaho. He has excelled at every position, being elected by his peers as the chairman of the National Governors Association. Also as governor, he established a bipartisan agreement to help reestablish spawning runs for salmon in the West. In 2006, he was appointed to U.S. Secretary of the Interior, where he oversees millions of acres of public lands and waters, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which is so vitally important to our sport fishing industry. I understand he has a few announcements to make, so I won't take up much more of his time. I would like to say I appreciate Sammy Lee and the Hall of Fame for allowing this time on their packed agenda this evening. So without further ado, please welcome the U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Mr. Dirk Kempthorne.
Tom, I thank you very much, and Sammy, you're wonderful. I want to thank Gene Bays for his encouragement to be here at this wonderful evening. Ladies and gentlemen, let me begin first. At approximately 3:37 p.m. this afternoon at Hartwell Lake, I reeled in a 3-pound spotted bass. Let me also say that I had an outstanding team who was with me. Dean Rojas, James Hall, Scott Paciello, and our captain, Captain Charlie Brown. Really a great team to be out there with, and I thank all of them. To hear the enthusiasm that all of you have for this event, for what this means to you, for this being a way of life, it's very special. I was encouraged by those who are putting on this wonderful evening tonight that I stay away from political controversy. Controversy such as bass fishing versus fly fishing. So let's talk about commerce. When I was a member of the United States Senate, as Tom pointed out, I was very honored to serve on the Senate Armed Services Committee. And when I was a rookie senator, I was under the impression that you were supposed to go to your hearings. On this one particular hearing, I was the only Republican who was there. All the Democrats were there, including one who I think is an American icon, John Glenn. You're seated at a large horseshoe table. I was seated at the other side. And based on seniority, so I wasn't even noticed. I sat there, though, and I listened to John Glenn. And I thought, this is very, very impressive. As I listened to what he was talking about, I thought, you know, he makes a great deal of sense. What I didn't realize is he'd raised that same issue for the last 3 years, and he never had the support of his colleagues. As he was wrapping up his arguments, there was a staff member behind me who leaned forward and said, "Sir, do you know that you have all the proxy votes of the other Republican senators?" I said, "You're kidding." And he said, "Oh, no, sir." So John Glenn made a motion for adoption. There was this silence because nobody was going to second it. So I second the motion. At that point, they glanced up, but it was no big deal. It's the rookie. And then they called the roll. Sam Nunn, who is chairman of the committee. Chairman Nunn, no. Senator Levin, no. Senator Kennedy, no. Senator Byrd, no. Everybody voted no except John Glenn. And then because there were no Republicans there, they knew it would go real fast. Senator Thurman, aye by proxy. Senator Warner, aye by proxy. Senator McCain, aye by proxy. Every time they called a name, I voted. Well, when they tallied it, John Glenn won. Chairman Nunn immediately adjourned the meeting. And everybody went out the different doorways, out into the hall, the marble hallway. And as I turned to go back to my office, standing at the end of the hall waiting for me was John Glenn. And as I approached, he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, apparently I'm your new best friend." And we did become very close friends. Tom also mentioned I was governor of Idaho, beautiful state. I invite all of you to come out there. I guess I'm not supposed to do that in my current job. But if you go to Idaho, I think you'll find it enjoyable. One of the things I would like and enjoy doing when I was governor is when occasions allowed, I'd ride my Harley. And on this one time, I was along the Locksaw River. And I stopped to see what the folks were doing there. A group of young people working for the Fish and Game Department. And they were catching, tagging, weighing, doing the data on bull trout, and then releasing them. And I thought, what a great job. I wish I'd have known about that sort of thing when I was going through school. I'll tell you the rest of that story very quickly. I rode on to Missoula, had some of my friends that were with me, but they went on because I had to stay for a meeting with the Western governors. Two days later when I left, as I was getting on the motorcycle, the Missoula City Police motor officers said, "We noticed you're riding alone. Do you mind if we ride with you for a while?" I said, "No." I said, "That'd be delightful." So we took off, got on the divided highway, and even though we had the two lanes going our direction, traditionally you'd ride in the right-hand lane, but these officers stayed in the left. I was in formation, so I just followed them. Well, apparently we weren't going fast enough for the motorists. So they'd come up right on my tailpipes, and I wouldn't pull over, so they'd pass me on the right, often signaling. They just went right around me knowing there was just two more of those bikers ahead. Of course, once they drew abreast of them, they saw those badges painted on their fuselage. Inevitably, the tail lights would come on, and they'd drop back into formation, and I would signal them. It's a real honor to be the Secretary of the Interior. It's a real honor to be with you here. Ronald Reagan once said that only in Washington, D.C., would the department in charge of the outdoors be called Interior. But we have, as Tom pointed out, we have about 1 out of 5 acres is under our jurisdiction. All of the national parks, all of the wildlife refuges, all of the BLM. We have the trust responsibility for all Native American tribes. It's interesting, but in Idaho, I now have more jurisdiction in this job than I did as governor. We have all the territories. We span 12 time zones. In fact, in American Samoa, I am referred to as Pulele Iite. I am a chief. It is good to be chief. In American Samoa. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me just tell you, though, that I'm delighted to be here in Greenville. This is a beautiful city. I'm very impressed by it. And it's a beautiful state. It's a wonderful place to be an angler, especially this week during the Bassmaster Classic.
What did you catch him on?
I'll tell you after the dinner. It is a beautiful fish. And we have pictures to show. The Bass Fishing Hall of Fame deserves great credit for promoting this wonderful sport to new generations by honoring the truly great contributors to the sport like Charlie and Nick and Buck and Virgil, who we will honor tonight. It's wonderful. I've listened to your enthusiasm about these wonderful people. You're encouraging future generations that bass fishing is a sport worth taking up. And I thank you for the invitation to be with you tonight. The Classic has become more than simply a fishing tournament. It is an American institution. It is a symbol of what fishing is to millions of Americans. It is a connection to nature. It's a bridge that links generations. It's a passion for conservation, a love for seeing first light shining across the water at dawn, a quickening of the heart when a fish rises to strike a line. As Secretary of the Interior, as I said, I have the honor of overseeing millions of acres of lands and thousands of miles of streams and rivers across our great land, and being with people like you. The department, in managing 1 out of 5 acres in the United States, we have a sacred responsibility of preserving and conserving some of our most beautiful places. And we have the responsibility of ensuring that Americans have access to these places, to hike, to bike, to boat, to camp, to hunt, and to fish. When I meet with President Bush, he often reminds me that we must keep our lands and waters open and available for sportsmen. The future of conservation depends on it. Dating back to Theodore Roosevelt, hunters and anglers have been the backbone of conservation in America. Through license fees and excise taxes, you have contributed the lion's share of funding for conserving our nation's wild places, our wild creatures. Equally important, sportsmen and sportswomen have formed organizations like the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame. And you're proud supporting organization Bass, both of which have led the way in conserving fish and wildlife. As I often point out, there are many environmental groups in this country that can put out press releases. However, the groups that really make a difference are the ones like yours, ones that can mobilize their members to get their fingers dirty. If you ask managers of our national wildlife refuges, who volunteers to restore a wetland or build a fishing pier for disabled anglers, they will tell you that it's the sportsmen, the hunters and the anglers. Before dawn, the hunters and anglers are waiting at the refuge gates, ready to get to work. When we at the Department of the Interior think of partners in conservation, you are the partners that we think of. I commend all of you for your contributions to ensuring that our fisheries are healthy and that all Americans have the opportunity to enjoy them. Along these lines, I announced earlier today to the members of the media assembled here in Greenville that the Department of the Interior is distributing more than $700 million to 56 states and territories this year under the Dingell-Johnson Sportfish Restoration and the Pittman-Robertson Wildlife Restoration Programs. More than half of these funds, $398 million, are contributed by the boating and angling community in the form of industry excise taxes and import duties on sport fishing equipment, and from taxes paid on motorboat and small engine fuels. These funds help pay for stocking fish, acquiring and improving sport fish habitat, providing aquatic resource education opportunities, acquiring and maintaining public boating access, and constructing boat ramps, fishing piers, and other facilities to support recreational boating. To give you an idea of the benefit America has received from this program, states have used these funds to acquire or manage more than 15 million acres of public fishing areas and boating access sites. These are places everyone can enjoy, those who fish and boat, as well as those who simply want to bring a picnic lunch and enjoy the absolute beauty of nature. The angling and boating community should be proud of the fact that they pay their way when it comes to conserving our nation's aquatic resources. It was sportsmen that lobbied Congress to ask them to dedicate taxes and license fees solely for the conservation and the perpetuation of healthy fish and wildlife populations, and for ensuring that Americans have places to go fish and to boat and to hunt. These programs have been highly successful and are a model of conservation for others around the globe. That is your legacy, and it's the legacy of America's anglers, hunters, and boaters. It's part of the culture of being a sportsman, a sportswoman, to invest in the conservation of our beautiful land and its wildlife. As sportsmen, you willingly give of your time, of your talent, of your treasure. Few groups have done as much for fishing and maintaining healthy fisheries as bass anglers. Throughout the country, you provide both resources and sweat for conservation projects that benefit all of us. Interestingly, Bass is one of the organizations represented on an advisory committee that I have back in Washington, D.C., the Sport Fishing and Boating Partnership Council. We have more than 100 advisory committees at the Department of the Interior. But this council is the only one that advises me on matters that you most care about. Boating, fishing, and aquatic resource conservation issues. I value the council's expertise and its advice. You should be proud that former Bass President and CEO Helen Sevier was one of a small group that advocated for establishment of the council. Now it's a reality. I recently appointed Bass General Manager Tom Ricks and National Conservation Director Chris Horton to this advisory body, and I look forward to hearing from them on issues that affect our aquatic resources. I certainly recognize the major role that anglers played in the creation of what potentially could be the best thing to ever happen to our nation's fisheries, the National Fish Habitat Action Plan. Just as the North American Waterfowl Management Plan has tapped into the power of local and regional partnerships to restore millions of acres of waterfowl habitat, the Action Plan will harness the energies, expertise, and existing partnerships of state and federal agencies and conservation organizations to improve habitat for fish. I'm pleased to report that President Bush continues to strongly support the plan and the budget of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, and Congress has provided the funds that he has requested. The current budget is $5.2 million to develop partnerships and improve habitat on the ground. The President's budget maintains that request level in fiscal year 2009. These dollars strengthen and support regional partnerships such as the Southeast Aquatic Resources Partnership and the Western Native Trout Initiative. We have five fish habitat partnerships in place and more than a dozen more being organized. Meanwhile, in the past 2 years, the Fish and Wildlife Service has funded 64 cost-share projects across the nation to restore fish habitat. We'll more than double that number in 2008 alone. These projects reopen streams for fish passage, restore shorelines and wetlands to benefit fish populations, and provide vital scientific data to help measure progress. President Bush also showed his strong commitment to recreational fisheries last October when he signed an executive order to protect and conserve striped bass and red drum as game fish in federal waters. The executive order will help ensure anglers continue to be able to enjoy healthy fisheries and the thrill of catching these extraordinary fish. Overall, we're making good progress in conserving and restoring our nation's fisheries. But if we're going to succeed, we will continue to need the strong support of all anglers, both the pros who are fishing at this tournament and the grandparents for teaching the grandchildren to catch bluegills. Let me close with a final challenge. A challenge that may be more important than any that we face. The challenge of connecting the next generation with the great outdoors. We've reached the dawn of the internet age. Vast numbers of children spend much of their lives in windowless rooms playing games online. Games in which the hunted are often human. They're being swept up by the technological revolution, with its instant access, its lightning pace, its amazing graphics. And they lose something vital to the human soul. You may know the statistics. During the past 10 years, fishing participation rates have largely leveled off and have not kept pace with the growth in population. Simply stated, we have to get children out of the house and out into the wild. We have a No Child Left Behind legacy for our schools. We need a No Child Left Indoors legacy for the great outdoors. That's why I was pleased to sign a pledge under the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation Angler's Legacy, a program that encourages anglers to share their love of fishing and introduce a newcomer to the sport. I'm gratified to know that 22,000 other people have joined me in that pledge. Each of us must personally commit ourselves to passing the love of fishing on to someone who has never fished, someone who has the opportunity now to fish. That is our legacy as sportsmen. Let me close with a story from one of my first days in the office as Secretary of the Interior. The Fish and Wildlife Service held a National Fishing Day event at a pond on the Mall in Washington, D.C. They stocked the pond with bass and bluegill, and they taught several hundred inner-city children to fish. What a delight it was to see the smiles on these children's faces when they reeled in their first fish. Many of these children have difficult lives that give them little reason to smile. What power a simple fishing line and pond have to light up their faces and quite possibly change a life. I remember one little girl in particular. She was 10 years old. I asked her what she wanted to be in life, and she said that she wanted to be a children's doctor. I asked her where she got that idea, and she said that she often had to see a children's doctor. I asked her if she had diabetes, and she said yes. I asked her if she had to inject herself with insulin every day. She said yes. Now, I don't know about you, but when I meet a 10-year-old who gets up every morning and gives herself an insulin injection, I consider her to be a little hero. If we can lift up this little hero by giving her a chance to breathe fresh air, if we can build her self-esteem by teaching her to catch a fish, then we may well someday have a new children's doctor. Then we can say that we have fulfilled our legacy as sportsmen and sportswomen. Ladies and gentlemen, you are part of something that is incredibly powerful. It is magnificent. As I listened to your comments as you prepared for this evening's event, it is inspiring. It borders on spirituality. So pass it on. Be the stewards that you are and share it with the next generation so that stewardship and conservation and preservation and enjoyment are known by generations to come. This is America the Beautiful, and you are part of it. God bless you all.